Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintika in Austin, Texas.
Welcome back to my weekly podcasts. I hope you're all well. Many listeners have heard of the five aggregates, khanda in Pali and skanda in Sanskrit. Given how frequently the Buddha mentions the aggregates, they must count as one of his most fundamental teachings. The aggregates of attachment are mentioned in his very first Dharma talk. But I would wager that many of you have done a lot of head scratching about them, as I did for many years, and have little idea how to actually put them to practical use on the path to awakening. The aggregates can be aggravating. I think part of the problem is that a lot of unhelpful and misleading things have been written about them. I would therefore like here today to present a practical way to contemplate the aggregates so that you can discover them in your actual experience. After we go through this exercise, I'll explain why they are so critically important in Buddhist practice. There's nothing particularly hard to understand about them if you just stop and look. You are all experiencing each of the five aggregates right now as you listen to this. In fact, everything you experience belongs to one or another of the five aggregates. This is a contemplative exercise, but I think, though adept meditators are apt to penetrate more readily the relevant factors, even non-meditators can begin to get a handle on this. Since the aggregates are always with you, any context will work in principle for this exercise as long as it is not too full of distractions. One of my favorite contexts for this kind of contemplation is taking a walk. This makes it a kind of walking meditation in a rather rich physical experiential context. But you can do this exercise sitting on a cushion in a quiet room with incense burning, or sitting with a picture of something interesting before you, while washing dishes, just about anywhere. I once presented this contemplation as a kind of guided meditation and asked people to stare at a ceramic model of a castle that I had brought in and to identify each of the five aggregates within the castle in turn. It's best to come back to this exercise over and over in a variety of contexts, even if just for a few moments at a time. I'll use walking in the woods as an example and leave it to the listener to reproduce it in other contexts. We're going to sort our experience of the world into five slices of unfolding cognitive complexity. First, as you're walking, consider the world as raw appearances, visual, auditory, tactile, shapes and colors play against your retina, audible vibrations on your eardrum, various sensations in your body. Try not to interpret these appearances, just let them wash over you as simple impressions without responding. This level of experience is preconceptual or right at the brink of the conceptual. If you're outdoors, there will be a lot of green. Above that, maybe blue, darker colors below your feet, various sounds, a cool sensation against the skin. As you move, shapes and colors will shift. And if you close your eyes, colors and shapes will disappear. Ignore any attempt of the mind to divide this world into recognizable objects or otherwise say anything about it. This slice of experiential events is called the form aggregate, which is to say, it's a rather random stream of simple appearances coming and going. The adept meditators among you might find the contemplation of forms a matter of what is known as bare attention. Even so, you'll notice that attention tends to move from one place to another, which underscores the impression of a stream of small experiential events. Second, Notice that certain elements of the first slice, the form aggregate, attract attention as either pleasing or displeasing. Bright green areas, dark and brown areas, nuggets of red or yellow, warmth on your face, tightness in your neck, audible twitter. Other areas of experience are rather neutral or bland and tend not to attract attention, to be overlooked. This slice of experience is known as the feeling aggregate. It adds a second voice to the chorus of your experiential world as an evaluation on the pleasing-displeasing scale. Third, notice that objects spring out of your experiences and declare themselves as familiar, things that you can probably give names to. Face, tree, sky, road, path, fence, bird, deer, car. You've seen such things before, and they're immediately recognizable. They also have qualities, big, small, green, decayed. This slice of experience is known as the perception aggregate, and it adds to the chorus of the experiential world a voice reporting conceptualized content. Spend some time letting perceptions announce themselves one by one. At this point, we can return momentarily to the feelings slice and find that objects, as they are perceived, also take on quite spontaneously characteristics of pleasing, displeasing, or neutral. The path that turns gently and disappears behind trees, the buzzing hornet, your dog, bear feces, blackberries, a snake, the revving of a motorcycle in the distance. Feelings arise in response to all levels of experiential events. Some things are alluring, others annoying, others neutral. Fourth, begin to notice how certain objects are related to others. Things like trees have shadows, fences are composed of posts at regular intervals and wire. Holes are made of parts, and parts are configured in relation to each other to form holes. This slice of experience is known as the formations aggregate. This is the aggregate that exhibits the most observable, deliberate cognitive activity, reasoning, and imagination. Actually, perceptions are also formations, the difference seeming to be that perceptions are quick and we don't notice their deliberation. The main thing to notice about the formations aggregate is its intentionality, in particular, the imagining of bodily action in relationship to physical objects. With the perception of a snake, the plan arises, don't go that way. With the perception of a fork in the path, two alternative plans arise, go left and go right. Intentionality also underlies perception without our noticing. A gate is a gate because of the potential it offers of bodily reaching the other side of a fence. Otherwise, it's just a loose board. A bench is a seat because of the potential for bodily sitting on it. It's a table if we can imagine tinkering with something placed on its upper surface. A rock can also be a seat or a table on the basis of similar intentionality. Things are pregnant with action. A door is an invitation to enter. As you're experiencing this rich world of relations, structures, and alternatives, you might notice that your attention tends to follow the structure of the formations, investigating parts, then subparts, or chains of relations, and spinning out into plans as we mentally place our bodies among the formations. Fifth and finally, notice that things seem to exist in the world out there in a very deep, ontological sense, not yet experienced among the other aggregates. You perceive a tail protruding from behind the tree, and you are aware of the whole squirrel with all of the major details. You close your eyes, the tail disappears. You open your eyes, and you know the squirrel was there the whole time. Objects observed at different times from different angles can still be the same object. You see only the right side of a deer, but you are aware of the left side beyond view, and you know that that is the same deer you saw yesterday and that it has existed continuously in the meantime. This slice of experience is the consciousness aggregate. Its voice adds a deep grasp of reality in every instant, or at least what it is convinced is reality. The Buddha compares consciousness to a magic show on the basis of what it conjures up and convinces us is real. In summary, the five categories of aggregates represent different facets of the world as we experience it in ascending depth or cognitive complexity. We can think of these as layers of physical reality unfolding progressively, starting with colors and shapes, then affective tones, then things and qualities, then structural relations among things, including an intentional overlay, and finally an ontological awareness pointing to a world beyond immediate experience. Forms are shapes or appearances arising in the immediate, in the present example, physical, world of experience. Feelings are affective tones of aspects of the experiential world along a like-dislike scale. Perceptions manifest as recognizable things and other features as physical objects corresponding to words or concepts. Formations are composites and configurations of experiences with a strong admixture of human intentions. Each instance of consciousness speaks of a fleshed-out reality of existing durable objects in three dimensions. A few additional observations are in order. First, each aggregate is a plurality. That is what aggregate means. Each element of the aggregate is an experiential event, also called a phenomenon. An aggregate is not a fixed cognitive faculty, as some teachers seem to depict it. It makes sense to think that such faculties stand behind experience, but that thought is just another conscious event. We can think of phenomena, forms, feelings, perceptions, and so on, as fireflies, temporarily limited, lighting up for an instant where attention alights and then disappearing, rather than the steady beam of a searchlight. Nonetheless, it should be evident that the aggregates reflect ascending conceptual or cognitive complexity, with one aggregate conditionally dependent on the previous. We start with forms as raw data, presumably mediated by our eyes, ears, and so on. Perceptions involve an initial level of cognitive analysis of the raw data. Feelings give an affective tone, but also help direct attention. Formations are a more complex and generally more deliberate level of analysis dependent on perceptions. And consciousness builds up cognizance of a full reality on the basis of formations. The series equivalently corresponds to descending levels of permitted concentration, that is, samadhi or jhana. Deeper levels of concentration entail a retreat from the higher aggregates, starting with consciousness. This gives the meditator another tool for discerning the aggregates. Very, very importantly, each phenomenon or experiential event has two aspects, like two sides of a coin. One is objective, the other subjective. We never experience one without the other. The subjective side includes awareness, also attention and cognitive or reasoning activities, particularly evident in the formations. The objective side is something outside of, but pointed to by the subjective experience. After all, when we are aware of something. The experience is an experience of something. Just as the word chicken written on a paper is not just ink, but denotes something out there in the world as well. Typically, the objects of experience are physical, whereas awareness itself and its concomitants are mental. However, the objects, can instead be mental. For instance, we can contemplate states of our own mind. Are we restless, concentrated, and so on, much like we investigate the world out there? Or we can be aware of cognitive processes. Also, parts of the subjective experience may be physical, like closing the eyes. Now, the big question is, why do we want to contemplate the aggregates? What's the point of all this? I think the answer is that it gives us a different perspective on our experiential world than we're used to, one that will lead to insights and letting go. The problem is that we generally have a strong tendency to overlook the subjective contribution to experience and think our experience is almost entirely objective. We live our lives out there, where we just need to show up to witness the world directly. Out there, we can pet some objects on the head, hug others, walk between objects, for we are ourselves another object out there, and put objects in our mouth and chew them. However, living our lives in the objective world is a problem, because it is out there that we become enamored and fearful, and where we become attached to things. Attachments are things we appropriate as me and mine as we establish our own personal footprint out there. Attachments famously entangle us in samsara. On the other hand, experiencing the world from the perspective of the aggregates forces us to recognize the subjective contribution to our experience. Accordingly, we see the world as entirely dependent on mind, and the objective world, therefore, to a significant extent, fabricated, even our most cherished attachments. The Buddha said, "Suppose, bhikkhus, an artist or a painter using dye or lac or turmeric or indigo or crimson would create a figure of a man or a woman complete in all of its features on a well-polished plank or wall or canvas. So too, when the uninstructed worldling produces anything, it is only form that he produces, only feeling that he produces, only perception that he produces, only formations that he produces, only consciousness that he produces." We thereby see the objective world as shoddy merchandise with cognitive seams left from the fabrication process. In fact, it's nothing more than experiential events, much as a sandcastle is nothing more than grains of sand. In this way, we begin to pull back from fabricating a world out there, eventually failing to see things as real, given, fixed, or existing in themselves. Our practice task as contemplatives is to examine the phenomena so categorized with a critical eye. Whatever kinds of form there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far and near, a bhikkhu inspects it, investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. Whatever kinds of feeling there is, and so on, whatever kinds of perception there is, and so on, whatever kinds of formations there are, and so on, whatever kinds of consciousness there is, and so on. Mindful of the mental component of all phenomena, we are less apt to take the world out there seriously, less apt to attach to its objects. The Buddha brings this unskillful tendency to a head in an extremely clever way by intersecting two rather contrary categories into a single phrase, aggregates of attachment. This is our own personal footprint from the perspective of the aggregates. If we are attached to something, it is only because we experience it. If we experience what we are attached to, we should be able to locate it among the aggregates. But this reveals its empty, fabricated nature made of sand. In order to drive this point home, we are furthermore asked repeatedly as a matter of practice in the Buddha's discourses to consider that we systematically examine the aggregates of attachment while telling ourselves, This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. This denies the basis of appropriating those things into our personal footprint. Alternatively, he does not consider form as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. He does not consider feeling as self, or self as possessing feeling, or feeling as in self, or self as in feeling, and so on. The phenomenal world, as reflected in the aggregates, is the entirety of human experience. The aggregates of attachment are the problematic part. It is not only the locus of what we know or think we know, it is, because it is of our own making and therefore of our own remaking, the locus of human intellectual, cognitive, and emotional development, of human flourishing and pathology, of suffering, of happiness, of greed, hatred, and delusion, and of their opposites, of aspiration and dreams, of attachment, of renunciation, of spiritual development, of careful examination with a still mind, of knowledge and vision, of things as they are, and of awakening. Thank you.